You're listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam Territory in British Columbia. What does it take to be a leader? Let's find out with today's guest, Steve Forbes. Welcome to another episode of Question Everything, where we connect young leaders with experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today I'm in New Jersey at the Forbes office speaking with Steve Forbes. Mr. Forbes is the chairman and editor-in-chief of Forbes Media. Forbes is the nation's leading business magazine, and Forbes.com reaches nearly 70 million users each month. Mr. Forbes is also the author of a number of books and was a presidential candidate for the Republican Party in 1996 and 2000. It's an honor to have you on the program today, so thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, today you're most prominently known as the chairman and editor-in-chief of America's Leading Business Magazine. But what people may not know about you is that you actually founded your first business magazine when you were in college, and it was called Business Today. Could you tell us more about that publication and what inspired you to start it?
Well, I think probably I have media or publishing genes. When I was growing up, I liked to do news sheets for my classmates at school. Did one grading my teachers. I felt they could grade me, I could return the favor. Did not go over it very well. College, with two others, we helped start a magazine called Business Today to bring a balanced perspective of commerce and business to the student world, published by undergraduates and still going on today, largest student publication in the country, in the U.S., and each year they do a couple of conferences, bringing students from around the world. So it's a thriving concern, which is a source of pride that they've been able to continue it all of these years.
What do you think is the key to building a successful and sustainable publication?
The key is to keep in mind what the late great management guru Peter Drucker once said. He said, businesses should always remind themselves, what is your mission? What is your purpose? Because if you know what you're there for, then you don't get quite as upset, hung up, or hamstrung when the means to achieve that goal change. In our business, print, which was print for decades, the whole model has been destroyed. Much of what I learned, what my siblings learned, has gone out the window. Forbes magazine was started almost a century ago by my grandfather, immigrant from Scotland, one of 10 children, grade school education. But like millions who came to the U.S., he had dreams and ambitions and an opportunity to realize them. And what he would see, what my father would see, who succeeded him today, would just absolutely confound them. The idea that newspapers are on the ropes, the idea that magazines are declining, the idea that you get your information now on a thing you call a web tablet from the web, iPad, whatever name you want to give to it, would have been incomprehensible. But it's all about communications, and it's all about having that mission and goal, and figuring out how you achieve that in very much changing times and circumstances. So we were fortunate that when we went into electronic publishing back in the mid-1990s, we did not make the mistake that other publishers made, who thought that if you took the printed page and put it on the web, that was electronic publishing. That kind of idea was similar to over 120 years ago when movies were invented. Some people initially had the idea that a feature film would be filming a stage play. No, very different mediums. So we separated them from the beginning, put it in a separate building, separate staff, reported to my brother and to me, not the chain of command, because in business or in anything else, if you're doing something, you bend and use everything for that purpose. And so we did not want the web to be subsumed by print mentality, and so we kept it separate. Then about 10 years later, with the adolescent web now capable of standing on its own feet, we made the decision to combine the two. They would not be separated. You would be working for both, not for one or the other. That was easier said than done. You had a culture clash. People on the print side thought that web journalism was junk. The web journalists thought that the print journalists were lazy, too full of themselves, and didn't know how to turn out copy on a regular basis. So a lot of people couldn't make the transition. Now it seems seamless, but it certainly wasn't at the time, bringing two cultures together like that.
You've seen a lot of changes in the publishing industry over the years. What do you think will happen with it in the next decade or so? Do you have any predictions of where it will be going?
What you can only safely say is that it will change. For example, on the website, it's hard to believe, but 5 or 6 years ago, most people had PCs, handhelds, what we call mobile devices, were very small. 5 years ago, less than 2% of our traffic came from mobile devices. Now it's about 60%. And content that appears on a mobile device is very different from content that appears on a nice tablet, a nice PC, or even an iPad, even though an iPad is considered a mobile device. And in terms of content, in terms of advertising, those have posed enormous challenges. You have devices now that do away with ads. One of the things we concluded is that trying to establish a paywall is preposterous. A couple of people can get away with it. The Journal so far has, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times has so far, sort of. But as in a restaurant, we expect the bread and the butter and the water to be free. So, too, online, you expect to get to it. And so these things normally have to pay for themselves with advertising. But the key thing, again, is getting that information across. Content creation has changed. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days, you had an editorial staff. You might the pubs might use freelance writers and the like. But we would turn out 12 or 1,300 articles a year. We still do today. But in addition to an editorial staff, we now have over 1,800 contracted contributors for our website. And you get paid by the traffic you generate. So editing that area is very different from the traditional print area.
When you have so many contributors coming from so many different backgrounds, how do you make sure that everybody's sharing that common vision and filter the information?
Part of it, a key part, is when you bring on a contributor, that individual brings an expertise in a certain area. And we figure that the need to draw an audience will discipline you on learning how to write fairly quickly. If you can't, then obviously you don't last and we let you go.
What do you think the keys are to being a good writer?
The key to being a good writer is having a clear mind. What are you trying to say? Say it simply. And like many things, there are very few natural-born writers. You learn through practice. Constant, constant doing. There is no substitute. You may have heard some people who say you must do 10,000 hours to learn to do the violin, or the Beatles did it 10,000 hours. So when they emerged, they were really superb. I'm not sure about the 10,000, but the idea that you have to keep doing it to get it is absolutely true. And one of the failings of universities in this country, I don't know what it's like in Canada, is not focusing enough on writing. And when you sit down, what point are you trying to make? Or if you don't want to make a point, know that you're not trying to make a point. Know what you're doing.
Tune in every Thursday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, where we bring you the Community Living Show. Full Hour is produced by the disabled community, showcasing for BC self-advocates with lots of interesting and fun content, including some interviews from special guests with special needs. Join hosts Michael, Kelly, and friends every Thursday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at citr.ca. Because you've got a friend in community living and CITR. I got them too.
You're listening to Question Everything on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today I'm speaking with the editor-in-chief and chairman of Forbes Media, Steve Forbes. You studied history in college. Did you do a lot of writing before that or throughout college?
In college, I did writing of papers, which I hated to do like most students, and did some writing for Business Today magazine, but not nearly on the scale that I do now. And and again, one of the key things of successful writing is what audience are you trying to reach? And an essay is different from an article, is different from a tweet, is very different from a book. And you don't have to master all of those mediums, but you have to know who you're trying to reach, what point you're trying to get across.
For sure. When you were in college, what was your favorite thing about history and studying that subject?
Well, the truth be told, I can tell you I didn't spend enough time in the classroom. Spent more of it doing the magazine, which was, a graduate course, you might say, in and of itself. Learning, you can say it, but until you do it, you don't realize the nitty-gritty detail that goes making things happen. And things just don't show up. Things just don't get written. Things just don't get produced. It takes a lot of detailed scut work. It's a good lesson to learn.
What advice would you give to young people who are interested in writing or maybe starting their own publications?
Well, in terms of starting a publication or starting a blog or website or whatever, ask yourself, what is it you are trying to do? Are you trying to brand yourself? Are you trying to establish an area of expertise where people will migrate to you? Are you just using it to get exercise? Do you want to combine with original content, aggregating and bringing pieces from other sites? So, again, it's about getting that message and learning now, especially with the flexibility of the web. You can bring in graphs very easily. You can bring in pictures very easily. And so a good discipline would be to take a well-out thought, not just, I feel lousy today, okay. Doesn't tell me very much why your dog died or some tragedy happened or you had a headache or what. But get it across in 140 characters. Twitter may be under pressure these days, but in the old days they had telegrams. Since you paid in those days by the word, which was very expensive money, you learned. Be concise and don't use I know or all the things you do in normal conversation. Get to the point.
How do you think you developed such a clear vision?
Part of it is curiosity, and part of it is how do I convey it so that people understand it in a way that I understood it? Since most things we don't know, most things we have to learn, you go through your mind what hammers home the point. That's why similes, metaphors are so powerful. People say, ah, yes, I get it. So trying to find that I get it phrase that brings it home to people. Academics make the mistake of thinking that if people actually understand what they're saying, they're not being profound. Or if you can use 100 words instead of 2, use the 100. No. Communication should have respect for the person you want to reach.
For sure. You took over Forbes Media when your father passed away, and I can imagine that would have been a really difficult time for you. What was the hardest part of making that transition?
My father was very flamboyant. He was a public persona. He'd have done very well in this day and age of reality TV. He was an inveterate motorcycle rider. So motorcycles are, I will always be too young to ride them. I know my limitations. And in terms of the other things, I think the key is, as my father said, and I'm glad he emphasized this with us, is develop your own style. Don't try to imitate. You can be use others as models, but learn, and you will learn. You don't arrive full-blown. And that's one of the things that people sometimes mistake, that when they go out in the world and they're not a roaring success by the age of 30, somehow you're not measuring up. Steve Jobs is the classic example. By the age of 30, he'd been fired from his own company. Even though he had a genius in certain areas, he was a failure as a leader. He learned painfully over the next few years how you bring people together, how you get things done. And it was never easy for him, but he mastered it and became a great leader. But he was not born that way. And so recognize when you go out of school, one of the things I wish they'd tell you when you graduate, warn you, is that up to now, your whole life has been structured each year, grades, freshman, sophomore. Yeah, certain periods of time you do certain things. You're constantly being evaluated. Yes, in the private sector, or when you get a job, you get an evaluation maybe once every 6 months or once a year. But it ain't the same as getting the report card. So a lot of people feel at loose ends. It's like the first time you go away from home. You get homesick. It's normal. So don't feel at a loss, or how am I doing, or so-and-so is doing well. I'm not going to get anywhere. Birthdays are approaching. Wah, wah. Put it in perspective. And and sadly, the best teacher is making mistakes. And key thing is what you learn from them. And also, contrary to what F. Scott Fitzgerald said, you can do second acts. And you see it, and one of the people are more open to that idea if you're older, but young people can have second acts. You can make a mess of things in the 20s or 30s and still put it together, and even pursue a totally new career. As one example, our publisher wrote a few months ago about a man in Florida, oncologist, cancer, very successful, highly respected in the field, ran a hospital and huge success, and at the age of 65 decided to become a commercial pilot.
Wow.
Not for a regular airline, because in this country you have to retire at age 65, but for charters and the like. He learned to become a pilot. Always as a kid wanted to do it, just decided he would do it and did it. So thanks to longevity, if you're not felled by disease, you can have more than one life. This thing, always pursue your passion. Sometimes you have to learn what is your passion, and that only comes from trying things. We don't arrive full-blown. Oh, this is my pathway. You may think you have it, but be open. You may not, and you may learn.
What were some of the things you did when you were younger to discover your passions?
Just doing it, whether it was the magazine at college, in terms of economics, being curious, why did certain things go wrong? Were the explanations we were provided in the textbooks, did they hold up? So searching, going beneath the surface of things. And if you have curiosity, your mind will be fine.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
Are You're listening to Question Everything on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Now, you've started your own magazines, you've managed a media company, and in 96 and 2000 you ran in the presidential race, and that's something that takes a great deal of courage that most people don't have. And I'm wondering how you found that courage and what motivated you to run.
Well, entrepreneurship, whether in business or going in the political arena, sometimes it's best not to know everything in advance. You'll learn as you go. And mine came by happenstance. I had not intended to go into elective politics. Back then, I was heading up an organization called Empower America, a reform group that had been founded by Jack Kemp, who was a noted figure at the time in American politics, Bill Bennett, who's still with us today, and Jean Kirkpatrick, who had been U.S. ambassador to the U.N. And we all thought that we were really doing work to lay the groundwork for Jack Kemp to run for president in 1996. He'd run in 88, had been in the Bush cabinet, and he seemed the natural. And he called us in December of 94, just before Christmas, and stunned us when he told us he wasn't running. So the question became, whoa.
Who's going to do it?
Who do we back? And I didn't find candidates who had the Kemp-Reagan optimism, pro-growth platform. And so I guess I took a page from my grandfather. Instead of complaining, go do it yourself. My grandfather, who started Forbes magazine, was a writer, wrote about entrepreneurs, and decided to become one himself.
What was the biggest challenge you faced when you made that decision?
Aside from learning to get back to sleep at night, was learning to be in a whole different environment, 24/7, learning that everything you say will be held against you, having an organization put together, knowing how to delegate. And so you're in a whole new world. Most people are not wishing you well, especially if you establish credibility. The media, usually, especially on my side, does not like people of a conservative bent. So you have to adjust to that world. And taking what Peter Drucker said, remind yourself, why are you doing this? And I had some ideas I wanted to get done. And if I couldn't do them, at least I'd get them out there and get the ball rolling.
Policy aside, what do you think the most vital characteristics leaders must have to be successful and to get people engaged in what they're saying?
One is, what are you trying to do? What is the goal? Establishing trust with people. There are various ways to do it, so they will go along with you. Learning how to delegate authority. You may be able to do a certain job better than somebody else, but is that the best use of your time? Even if you could do it better than the person who is doing it, recognizing what people are good at and what they're not, and recognizing in one situation they may be perfect, in another situation they may be not good for this at all. Also recognizing that no matter how bright you are, no matter how good you are, no matter how on top of the game you are, you will make mistakes, either because of circumstances or because of mistakes you made, but you're going to face crises. And sometimes there's going to be no playbook. You're going to have to draw inside to deal with this thing with no guarantee of success. And you got to have that fortitude to face that. You have to be an innovator if you're going to be other than a run-of-the-mill leader. And that, too, is risky. Most new businesses fail. And it's not an easy thing to have that smacked at you. So if you have the temperament for it, great. If not, recognize it. We're not all the same. We're not all the same. So you can have, I hate to trivialize it, flavors of the month of kinds of people we want to be. And no, you've got to understand who you are. You may have to change in the face of circumstance. And one of the things of a leader, too, is you have to sometimes be willing to go in a situation where you're not fully prepared. But it's the opportunity, and if you don't take it now, it's probably never going to come back again, and you just have to go in and do the best you can. There's no, oftentimes in these situations, there are no graduate schools where I go in with my degree and I know how to do finance. You'd be just thrown in the water, mm-hmm. so to speak. You have to learn how to swim.
How have you dealt with that uncertainty?
You just do it. You know, you may have people deal with it in certain ways. Some eat food they shouldn't eat, whatever. But there is no potion that will, I'll get a good night's sleep tonight. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about one of your books for a moment, Power, Ambition, Glory. I want to read something from it here. You discuss the characteristics of leaders like Alexander the Great, and you say that he was ultimately destroyed by his inability to set limits for himself and to manage his success. His head was turned by vanity and remains the classic example of Aristotle's warning that it's more important for a leader to conquer himself than to conquer others. Could you elaborate on what you meant by that?
Well, one of the challenges is when you succeed at something, you really believe you know what you're doing. So in business, you may have not realized the world's changing, and what worked yesterday is not going to work today. But the key in all of this, is adaptability. Having your principles, but being recognizing you're going to have to adapt, and learning when you make the change and when you say, this will pass, I'm not going to get upset about it, I'm going to just ride it by.
One last question I was going to ask you. You're the father of five daughters, and I'm wondering how you've managed your personal life and your professional life.
Your personal life and professional life sometimes just meld together, but there is no formula. And sometimes you're going to make sacrifices. And the idea that you can do everything, you can balance everything, especially if you're in leadership or entrepreneurship, just not possible. And so you try to do what you can, and especially with your spouse, and work things out. And figure out what approach you're going to take with raising kids. I'll give you just one example, which will not sound very nice, but we figured, my wife and I, that we should, with the kids, do one thing that was absolutely, utterly unreasonable, but we're going to be inflexible about it. In this case, pierced ears. No pierced ears until you're 18. Oh, my friend, don't care. Not going to do it. Just establish certain things. And I don't know what they're going to do with their kids, but just one thing. And you try to get certain lessons across and recognize, as my father liked to say, you know you're a successful parent when you become an embarrassment to your children. It's just part and parcel of bringing kids up.
I had the same thing happen with my parents. They wouldn't let me get my ears pierced. Oh. Looking back, I'm grateful because it did teach me that you can't have everything right now, right away, and sometimes things just are the way they are.
Yeah. It holds in good stead.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Question Everything, where we bring you inspiration and insights from creative minds and experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can download the show at iTunes, SoundCloud, and at citr.ca.
This is Laura from Roku.